Okay, tonight's cheer is in some ways a very, very extended footnote to my cheer on Monday night, believe it or not. Some of you present may recall that the Gemara in Chelek, which we have been learning, sought to calculate the length of the Messianic era. And one of the suggestions put forward by the Gemara, Rabbi Eliezer, I think it was, maintained that there is a correspondence between the time the Jews wandered in the Midbar and the length of the Messianic era. And in a sense, the challenges that Bnei Yisrael had in the Midbar were compensated for, will be compensated for, during Yemos HaMashiach. And the Gemara there explicitly mentions the challenge of living on the Mun. And that's this week's Parsha. And in fact, the Torah says in this week's Parsha, Perek Tes Zayin, after Bnei Yisrael arrived in the Sinai desert, they all bitterly complained to Moshe, Mi yitain musenu biyat Hashem, better that we were to die in the hand of Hashem in Mitzrayim, where we were able to get lots of food, the flesh pots of Egypt, lots of bread, and here we have nothing to eat. Moshe, in response, promises them the Mun. Hashem promises them the Mun. Moshe communicates that. Vayomer Hashem al Moshe, this pasuk dalad, Hineni mamti lochem lechem min hashamayim. I will rain for you bread from the heavens. Yatsa ha'am, the nation will go out, palaktu, and they will gather devar yom biyomo, the amount of food that they need on a daily basis, lama'an anasenu, so that I can test them, hayelech b'sorasi imlo, if they will go in my Torah or not. So the pasuk here explicitly asserts that the Mun is a nisayon. And in that sense, it's consonant with the Gemara I just mentioned to you in Sanhedrin. The question is, what is exactly the nisayon of the Mun? What is the test? What was so difficult about the Mun? So for tonight, again, this is a kind of an extended footnote and commentary on that Gemara in Perek HaChelek. I'd like to look at a number of accounts of that Nisayon, not my own Chidushim in themselves. They really derive from the classical Mefarshim on the Torah. I'd like to look at a few of those explanations and then reflect about the significance of those explanations for our own lives. So where else to start but Rashi? Rashi says, "L'ma'an asenu hayelech b'sorasi, im yishmeru mitzvos hatluyos bo." If they will keep the mitzvos that are dependent upon the Mun, i.e., shelo yosiru imenu, they shouldn't leave anything over to the next day, below Yetzu b'Shabbos l'ukot, and they should not go out on Shabbos to collect the Mun. So Rashi says the Nisayon, the Sorasi that the Torah refers to, the Torasi that the Torah refers to, are the mitzvos that connect to the Mun. And the mitzvos bring a special challenge. Will Bnei Yisrael obey those mitzvos or not? Hashem will test them to see if they do. So I'd like to reflect more broadly about Rashi's explanation as it relates to our own lives in the following two ways. First of all, Rashi asserts, at least Rashi understands the Torah to assert, that the gift of the Mun bore with it certain responsibilities. Specifically, the two mitzvos that Rashi mentioned, but I'd like to expand that idea in a conceptual way. First of all, consider what happens when somebody changes his or her status from single to married. Or consider what happens if somebody has a child. Or consider what happens if somebody gets a new job. In each of these cases, there are new responsibilities thrust upon a person by virtue of having entered into a new role. having a child is a massive set of responsibilities. In fact, it's a daunting set of responsibilities, and those responsibilities never end. It's not like when the kids grow up, you can say, okay, ciao, nice knowing you, take care of yourself. We all know that that's not the way it works. Parents are enduringly responsible for their children. One wise person once said, you've probably all heard this, that no parent can ever be happier than his or her least happy child. No parent can be happier than his or her least happy child. Just to say that a parent always feels responsibility for the welfare of children. So it's a role that carries with it and generates and then carries with it enduring responsibility. Same is true of marriage. When you're single, just take care of yourself. As a husband or a wife, you have a deep responsibility to a spouse. Kaya just came into the room and corrected me. Is that really true? She said, it's not a parent who can't be any happier. It's only a mother who can't be any happier than a least happy child. So I, as a father, expanded the categories. Kaya, as a mom, says, no, it's only a mother. So she probably knows better than I do. That's the responsibility of a spouse I was talking about, to always acknowledge that your other spouse is right. Okay, so that's one of the responsibilities. So being a husband or a wife certainly carries with the responsibility of taking a new job. Ellen was talking about pastoral counseling. If one becomes a pastoral counselor, chaplain in a hospital, that's a very, very, very substantial responsibility, and it's a change of role. And what I'm suggesting is that any change in role brings with it very, very substantial responsibilities. And I'd like to suggest to you that being an Ochel HaMan, when Bnei Yisrael began to eat the man, that was a change in role. They weren't the slaves in Mitzrayim who were eating the scraps of food from their master's table. Their role was elevated. They became the table guests, as it were, of Hashem himself, who provided them, as it were, with his own hands, the food that they ate, and a remarkable and miraculous food it was, came down every day, quite a remarkable food. So that reflected a change in role from slave master, who provided scraps of food to the slave, to an elevated status as Hashem's people, whom he personally provided for with the miracle of the man. And that creates responsibilities. I would suggest to you, when Rashi speaks about the mitzvos, I would broaden that. It's not only the technical mitzvos that the man entailed, which Rashi specifically mentions, but I would say more broadly speaking, entering a new role like that brings with it certain responsibilities. And it's true in many, many, many dimensions of our lives. And it's something that we all need to continue to be cognizant of as we shift roles throughout our life, because we always do. I can just think one big shift in role is when, as parents become very, very elderly and they are blessed with children, then it's a responsibility of children to care for parents. So it's a role reversal. It used to be the parents who care for the kids. As parents become very, very elderly, then children have an increased responsibility for their parents. Shift in role brings with it additional different responsibilities. So that's one way that I would extrapolate Rashi's thesis into different dimensions of our lives. And I'd like to extrapolate in a somewhat different way as well from Rashi's perspective. One of the distinctive hallmarks, I think, distinctive hallmarks of Judaism is that our conception of ourselves in the world is that of obligated beings. If you think of the Western model, we're all heirs as well to the Western tradition, John Locke, you know, we are all free beings, John Stuart Mill, we can do whatever we want. As long as you don't get in the way of anybody else, you don't harm anybody else, we're free to do whatever we want. We are go west, young man, you can go west, you can go east, you can go up, you can go down, you can do whatever you want, you're free. And then sometimes certain responsibilities are added to us ourselves, but most fundamentally, as we think about ourselves, we are autonomous beings in the world. free to do what we want, except given certain limitations. That, I believe, is fundamentally antithetical to the way that Judaism, at least as I understand it, historical Judaism, looks at what it is to be a self in the world. To be a Jew is to be fundamentally a mitzuveh or a mitzuvah. We are fundamentally commanded. To be born as a Jew, you're born, boy or girl, boy, bris milah, girl, whatever it is, you're born into a set of obligations. Those obligations continue to accrue. There's bas mitzvah, bar mitzvah. As we get older and older, there are more and more mitzvos that devolve upon us. But we are not fundamentally free creatures swimming in the world as we wish. We are fundamentally mitzuvim. We are fundamentally commanded to live out, to enact, to bring forward Hashem's will in the world. Hashem has a will for us. He wants us to live certain kinds of lives, to behave in certain kinds of ways, morally, ritually, spiritually, intellectually, and we can't escape those. It's not like we're free and then, oh, there's a little this and there's a little that. Fundamentally, to be a Jew is to be an Eved Hashem. So I think Rashi, in speaking about Mun, is really opening up a classic, I would say, Ashkenazi way of looking at a Jew in the world as most fundamentally a mitzvah. And when we got the mon, we just entered into another additional category of mitzvah. That's a part of the nesayon of life as a Jew, to live up to the challenge of being a mitzvah. So that's Rashi and my two suggestions for, I think, for expanding on Rashi's basic insight as to the meaning of the Messiah. The Ramban, as is not infrequently the case, disagrees with Rashi. In his succinct words, he quotes Rashi and then he says, "V'einenu nachon." Wrong. Rashi's not right. When you're Ramban, I guess you can say that about Rashi. We can't quite say that. But he offers another interpretation of the Nisayim, which I think also in different ways ramifies into our lives. The Ramban says that the Nisayim consists, and these are related, he says the novelty of Mon, like nobody ever saw anything like food raining down from the heavens. Certainly B'nai Yisrael had never seen that in Mitzrayim. And he focuses on the insecurity of the mon. In other words, yes, we got today's portion today. Will mon come down tomorrow? The morrow comes, mud comes down. What about the next day? There's a fundamental insecurity, anxiety attached to the hand-to-mouth lives that mon require. If you're a farmer, you farm your fields, you see the wheat grow, you see the fruits grow, you see the fruits grow on the tree, Tu B'Shvat, you see all the wonderful produce of the foods as they grow. It was Tu B'Shvat yesterday. So there's a certain, I would say, security in the earthbound life of a farmer. Now, of course, maybe issues of drought, lack of rain. And I'm not saying we're totally secure, of course not. But seeing the plant, planting the seeds, seeing it grow, there's a certain future that one, solidity, and stolidity to a future. It's not the case of the mon. Came, can't leave anything over for the next day. The next day, zero. It's not like you go to the fields and the next day the wheat is a little bigger. The next day there's nothing until the mon comes. And by the night of that next day, it's all gone. So there's a very fundamental insecurity to that. And the Ramban goes on to say that that insecurity cultivates the midah of emunah. So we have to have emunah in Hashem. Otherwise, where would we be? Which I think is, there's a lot of truth to that. A lot of truth to that. Now, how does it apply to our lives? I would suggest that it applies to our lives in at least two ways. So, the first way that I have in mind, I'll distinguish between two kinds of jobs or parnassus that a person can have. One kind of parnassa is you work for a boss, you draw a paycheck, and as long as you're employed, the paycheck comes. And that's true for many of us. True for myself. I work for a college, also to maybe a lesser extent, sure. But you know, there's a, you know, your paycheck comes. Terrible things can happen. Chas v'shalom, you know, business can go bankrupt. Think bad things can happen, but there's a certain, I would say, more or less security to working for a stable organization. Chas v'shalom, people can get fired. I don't mean to, you know, say that everything is perfect, but there's a certain stability to that kind of a life. On the other hand, there are people who have retail stores, businesses where every day somebody's come in and got to buy the napkins that you're selling, because otherwise you won't have a parnassa for the day. Will they come in or not? There's considerable insecurity. Somebody who has a consultancy or a practice of some sort, depending upon clients. Will clients come in the next day? I remember my father, may he be well, for a long period of time, he worked for a big company as an art director. And then the company changed hands and he was let go. They didn't need the art department anymore with the changing of hands. And he opened up his own business as a designer, as an artist. And he would always tell us that he felt the presence of Hashem every day that he got a client, because he didn't know if the client would walk through the door or not. That is the experience of the mud. That the sense that we never can be totally sure of where things come, and that cultivates emunah, cultivates bitachon. Rabban calls it emunah, I call it bitachon. But a sense that Hashem ultimately takes care of us. And the key point here is that even those of us who are in the first kind of job, right, we have a regular paycheck. We need to be very conscious of the fact that nothing is guaranteed. Nothing is guaranteed. I was just speaking to somebody who was laid off from a very secure position, totally unexpectedly. Boom. Happened. Without a job. And so I think model number two, business, consultancy, private practice of some sort, really the insecurity and anxiety attached to that, and the midah of bitachon that it cultivates, Hashem, saying Talumata Lavracha, we dive into Hashem, give us a parnasa that's felt more acutely for those who live on a consultancy retail model. But those of us who are not at that model need to learn from those who are on that model, because the reality is that there is no security, and that we have to dive into Hashem every day for a parnasa. And that I would say that Mun is a model for Bezeya Sapecha Tochalacha. That all parnasa is insecure, unstable, and one can never predict with certainty the future. And therefore, it's a nisayon. The nisayon for the Ramban is the nisayon of bitachon. Very hard. And I think that everybody needs to learn from that model. That's one way in which I would look at the nisayon. And I'll tell you another way as well, and this is autobiographical from my own personal experience. Different than what I'm saying now, but this is the second way I can read the Ramban. I still remember over 30 years ago when Mayor Weingarten and a few others approached me about the possibility of serving as Rav in the shul. I wasn't looking for a rabbinic position at the time. I was pursuing an academic career. I still did. And I mean, I had smicha, and I was always into that, obviously into learning, but I really wasn't looking for a rabbinic position. And when they approached me about it, I had all kinds of anxieties. First of all, would I have the time to do it? Yeah, family obligations, my primary source of income obligations. I also was unsure if I had the spiritual worthiness to be the Rav of the shul. You know, did I really merit it? Did I have the ruchnias? Did I have the capacity in that sense to be a Rav of a shul? And did I have sufficient learning? Did I know enough? I wasn't sure about myself. Did I know enough to be a competent, responsible Rav? And I really remember, you know, back and forth, should I do it? Shouldn't I do it? And any time in general that new possibilities are thrust upon us, that is a kind of an asayan, laman anasenu, b'torasi. And in my case, it was a question of Torah. Now I'm speaking autobiographically. I did feel a calling to be a rabbi. I felt that I could make a contribution, as difficult as it might be for me, given all the other things I was doing. And I took, what should I say, a leap of faith. You know, I had faith that hopefully it would work out, even though I wasn't sure about it and wasn't sure about myself. I hope it did. I guess you can judge yourselves whether or not it did or didn't work out. But I think many of us in the course of our lives are faced with this nisayon of Laman Yelech B'Torasi. Can we stretch ourselves beyond what we think we are confident of to be a better Jew, to serve Hashem in better ways, to help people in different and many, many better ways? And I really felt that I wanted to do this. I felt that I could try to make a contribution. I thought it would be important to me, although it wasn't something I was planning on really. And it's something that I think was worth doing. I continue to think it was worth doing. I'm still doing it with Hashem's help. And I think that that's another meaning of the Ramban, that like the mun, it represents a spiritual stretch. Are we zoche? Are we worthy of the mun? Is, you know, come, will it come? Won't it come? What's this new thing? Can I do this new thing? Can I make it happen? And we are called to stretch ourselves, I would say, in ways that we didn't think we could, as Bnei Yisrael were called, to stretch themselves to be ochlei haman in the midbar. So those are two ways that I read the Ramban into my life, and perhaps you will read it that way into your lives as well. The next explanation I'd like to mention is the Sforna. The Sforna says, and I quote, Kishiyiye misparne shelo bitza'ar, when a person has parnasa without the angst and toil of working towards it, ka'amram chazal lo nitna Torah elo li ochle haman. This is the Chilta, that the Torah was given only to those who eat the man. What the Chazal are saying, the Mechilta is saying, is that excellence in Torah study is only the possession of those who don't have to worry about working a regular job. If you work a regular job, you're busy farming the fields, you're busy working in an office as a lawyer, if you're busy practicing medicine, whatever you're doing, takes time. Time is a zero-sum game. And to be a complete master of the Torah, lo nitna Torah, Torah is given really only to those who don't have to work for a parnasa. They're ochle amana, you know, Hashem takes care of them. They're in an eternal kolel. You know, they're supported by tzedakah, supported by the government, whatever they're supported by, and they can devote themselves entirely to the study of Torah. That's the Sfarna's reading of it. So what then is the Nisayan? It's not clear. He doesn't say clearly. So this is one interpretation. I'll offer it to you of the Sfarna. That's all he says. The question is, I think that the Sfarna is pointing to is, can one live up to the expectations of being a true master of the Torah if one doesn't need to work? Put differently, to be a true master of the Torah requires incredible effort, unimaginable effort. Day in and day out, morning, afternoon, night, study, 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 study. Most people can't do that. They've got a good excuse. Got to work, got to earn a parnasa, got to support my family, support myself. But if somebody doesn't have that excuse, can they actually achieve mastery of Torah? It's very, very difficult to devote oneself morning, afternoon, and evening to Talmud Torah. And the gift of Mun raised the bar. And once the bar is raised, one feels inadequate. The Nisayan is to live up to that bar. And I will tell you, I have over my years in higher education seen over the years, really quite a number of truly gifted students walk through the doors, ace their way through high school, 1400, 1500 SATs, really intellectually gifted young men, but they're so smart that they feel oppressed by their gifts. It's too hard to live up to them. I can't, look at all these expectations. I'm so talented. How can I, you know, get into Harvard Medical School? That's too much for me. Forget the whole thing. I'm finished. I can't deal with it. The more talents one has, the greater the expectations. And the greater the expectations, sometimes the harder it is to get off the starting mark to get anywhere, because you feel so overwhelmed by your potential. People with incredible musical talent sometimes fear what it takes to realize those gifts because their gifts are so great, or artistic talent, or literary talent, or mathematical ability, or whatever the abilities would have, and people, emotional intelligence, whatever the abilities are. The greater the abilities, sometimes the greater the obstacles to achieving even half of what one's abilities promise. And it could be that within the Siyam, that the Sferna is saying is, the bar was set so high by having mun that the Nisayan is, could they learn any Torah? What could they really do at that time? And that's a real issue. That's a real issue. It's an absolutely real issue. And I can hear, just in my own experience over the years, of just how powerful a Nisayan that is. And it's a Nisayan for all of us, because every single one of us around this Zoom table has different abilities and different talents. And sometimes we don't want to rise to meet the bar of the gifts we possess because it's just too hard. And that's to fail the Nisayon of the mind. So that's the Sforna. Finally, I'll mention to you the Or HaChaim. Also, in the Makaros Gedolos, so these the Farshim are all very accessible to anybody who has Makaros Gedolos. He says something very similar to the Sforna, but I think it's a little different. And what I understand the Or HaChaim to be saying is that the challenge of the mun is you've got a lot of time on your hands. What are you gonna do with that time? Mishnah in Ksuba says, Batala mevi alide shi'amum. If you don't have anything to do, you get really, really bored, and that boredom can be very, very distracting, distressing, enervating. It can just grind one away. You know, people who retire tell me that successful retirement, at least in part, requires creating a schedule for yourself. I'm gonna do this in the morning, then 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock, 12 o'clock, I have a program for the day. Because if you don't have a program for the day, you sit around and you don't feel that you're accomplishing anything. And retired or not, that's a not very good feeling to have. Being bored, so you sit around, you read some trashy novels, you surf the web, you watch a silly movie, whatever, it's an awful feeling. In fact, I know for myself, when I go on vacation, it takes me a very long time. I mean, I have a lot of things to do in my life. I'm very, very busy. It takes me a long time just to be able to sit down and read a book, just for the pleasure of it, because my life is so busy with so many responsibilities. The thing is, once you hit the vacation mode, then I know for myself, I kind of, it was really nice. I read a mystery. I haven't read a mystery in like 20 years. Great. I relaxed. Maybe turn on the television and see what junk is there. After a while, I begin to feel pretty yucky about myself. Like, okay, time to do something worthwhile with your life. And I think that's the Nisayan of Achilas Haman. They had it very easy. They didn't have to work for their food. So they can do anything useful with their lives. And that was a challenge. It wasn't the challenge of meeting the bar of high expectations. It was the challenge of the temptation to become lazy, to do nothing, which also could be a consequence of, somebody grows up really wealthy, the heir, you know, somebody's parents, grandparents, great, all very, very wealthy, heir to great wealth. That sometimes leads these kids to distraction, to drug addiction, because they've got nothing to work for. Everything comes in a silver platter. You know, they by the time they get the driver's license, they're driving a BMW. It's everything comes too easy, so you don't have to work. And there's a lot of boredom that can be destructive. And so for the Or HaChaim, I think the nisayon of the man was to create meaning and Torah and Avodas Hashem out of a life that did not distract them with the challenges to make it through the day. So that's something we all face, different parts of our lives. People who are employed have this challenge. People struggling with employment. During COVID, people were at home. Either they lost their jobs because of COVID, but they were home a lot. People are still home a lot. And that's a challenge. That's the challenge of Achilas Aman. If you have, you know, some kind of parnasa coming in, even if it's no more than an unemployment check, you can get by. What do you do with your life to make it meaningful? How much Torah do you learn? How much chesed do you do? Are you calling people who might need a telephone call? Lots of stuff to do, even if one is not employed. So that is the fourth reading of the Lama'an Anasenu Hayelech B'Sorasi Yimlo. There's Rashi's reading that new roles bring responsibilities, new responsibilities. There's the Ramban's reading that anxiety, insecurity evokes bitachon in Hashem. There is the Sfarna's reading that raising the bar makes it hard to meet those expectations, Torah study. And then there is the Or HaChaim's reading that having no work can lead to a life degradation and meaninglessness. So here we go, Pasuk in the Chumash, all sorts of mafarshim read it. And as usual, to my mind anyway, as we look deeper, we discover the implications of those interpretations and the infinite depth of the Torah and riches of the Torah in our own life.